Jeff Harding here with PS Tech, and I'm here with another interview for you. I was introduced to this wonderful lady by Mike Wells. Mike Wells is a PS Tech practitioner and also a hypnotherapist. His link on this page, if you're listening to this audio, he's at mwhypno.co.uk. Mike brought Melody to my attention because he said, this is a wonderful story. And when Mike says something, I really listen. He knows what he's talking about, and he has an incredible heart behind everything that he says, thinks, and does. Again, you got to check into some of Mike's interviews on our site as well. Mike brought to my attention Melody and said she's got a great story, and I think she would be really open. And I contacted Melody via email, and she said, sure, right away. You know, like within minutes, I think it was, it seemed like. And I appreciate that. Melody, welcome. We appreciate you taking the time here with us today.
Hi, Jeff. It's a pleasure to talk with you today.
Melody, there's a lot of dynamics to your story. Mike gave me a little overview, and then you and I chatted for a little bit. I wanted to first start with kind of the beginning, not too far back per se, but I think at some point you felt like, okay, this is the lowest of the low, right?
Exactly.
Well, okay. give us an idea where you were. What was going on?
Well, about 7 years ago, I probably hit the same skid that so many people in America hit, in that in a very short period of time, I lost my job. And unfortunately, I had a house in New Mexico that was in a new build area that I couldn't sell. I almost got foreclosed on the house and ended up with a short sale on the third attempt. In fact, it was by the grace of God at this point that the house sold when it did. That didn't help me. That ruined my credit, of course. I ended up coming back to Texas probably 6 months after I lost my job because there were no jobs in New Mexico. Fortunately for me, I'm blessed with a really good family that took me in and gave me a place to stay and made sure I wasn't hungry and all those wonderful things. It was a real, real struggle for me because of the fact that even before New Mexico, I'd gone through a traumatic divorce where my best friend of 10 years had fallen in love with another woman. And so I had that on top of the fact that for the first time in my life, I'd actually been let go of a job, not just a job, a major job. And so then I came back to Texas and gosh, within another short period of time, I lost my car in a freak hailstorm. It sounds like just one of those bad nightmares that goes on and on, you know. And I felt stuck. I felt stuck because I was told I was too old. I'll be 60 on my next birthday. I was too educated. I have a master's degree in engineering management. I was too this, too that, too something else. Or I wasn't qualified enough for other things. So I really hit a low point in my life because I became one of those 99ers where I went on unemployment for almost, 5 years or whatever it was the government was giving at that time. And, you know, and I've known Mike Wells for, 8, 10 years, and he's been such a staunch friend of mine throughout the years. He's such a good man, as Jeff said. I remember the day he told me about PS Tech and said, Mel, I know you're having a really hard time. Try this. I've tried it. You know all my situation. It's really helped me out. No, I'm stubborn. I think I taught the mules to be stubborn and donkeys to take notes on it because I said, absolutely not. I'm this, I'm that, I'm something else. Mike and I had a little tiff. We sort of parted ways a little bit. He said, well, Mel, he says, you need to go on your journey for a while, but I'm always here.
So that's interesting. It's interesting in retrospect. Mm-hmm. Two things. A lot of people, you know, had lost jobs, of course, in the U.S. and other places as well, other countries. Half the people get divorced, you know, statistically, and lose houses, etc. All these kind of things. But what was the prevailing feeling that was going on back then?
I think the prevailing feeling at that time was fear, and that sense of hopelessness that things are not going to get. That are never going to change because it just seemed like everything it seemed like it was a dominoes that kept collapsing and collapsing and collapsing and collapsing. And no matter how hard I tried, it kept collapsing.
And would you say prior to that, the fear that you felt when it did collapse, of course, the fear was already present before that, wasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. It was just exacerbated by it all and brought to the front, because I had always prided myself on being able to take care of myself and get through anything. And this time it just seemed like I couldn't.
I think this is important. And of course, I've thought about it before, but never really articulated it in this way. But your example, I think, is wonderful because like you just said, it brought the fear to the forefront, right?
Mm-hmm.
When all this happened, but the fear was already there. And I think a lot of people, when things are kind of going well and they're kind of, you ever seen the guy, everybody's seen the guy that spins the plates on the little stick, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he'll spin like four, five, six at a time. And he goes back and spins one and keeps them going. They start wobbling and he keeps all the plates spinning, but he has to keep keeping them spinning. He has to
right.
go, you know, running back and forth, running back and forth. And that's kind of how we, a lot of times, run our lives, right?
Oh, absolutely agree, Jeff, on that point. And that's how I felt.
And we're so afraid it's going to fall. And it is going to fall if we don't stop.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or if we don't stop adding more and more stuff to what we think we have to do. So the reason why I bring this up is I think it's really important that people that are listening now, that even if things seem like all the plates are spinning well, I think that can be one of the best times to really look at these fears and clear them up so that things don't come crashing down on you. Does that make sense, Melody?
It makes perfect sense because, as yeah. I was telling you earlier, I actually remember the first time I ever listened to the Click Tracks. And it was a day that I felt really, really bad. And I lived next to a small park at that time, and I decided to take a walk with my headphones. It was about sunset, and I started listening to it. And getting into it and just letting that fear and everything that I had carried, I was so tired inside. And then suddenly when it was over, it's like the person who realizes their leg wasn't broken, even though it'd been hit hard. It's like, wow, this is amazing. I feel better. I've forgotten what it felt like to feel better about things. And then I started thinking about it some more, and I couldn't wait to tell Mike about how wonderful that was. And then I just started working on me. I started to take that journey to me.
What was it that helped push you past that point? And again, the other point I wanted to make, too, was not only the fear that was there, but you had this definition that said, I am this, I am stubborn, I am, you know, this won't work because I'm too blank, fill in the blank, right?
Right.
And I think a lot of people come across something like PS Tech and other things that can work too, and they'll say, well, it won't work for me because I'm different. I'm this, I'm that, you know, and again, fill in the blank. What brought you, I hate to say it this way, what finally brought you to your knees where you surrendered?
Well, I think it was the fact that Mike, you know, I would try to discuss something and Mike would say, use a click track, Mel. It'll get rid of it. Oh, my God. He must have said that at least 1,000 times. And I go, no. He goes, yes, Mel. He goes, just click it away. You don't need it anymore. It's not a part of you. It's not who you are anymore. And in the beginning, of course, you know, I had an argument for everything. And he'll laugh when he listens to this. But it's true. And then I just started working on it. And then Mike would get on and he'd start doing some of his sessions with me. And we'd start, he'd say, Mel, take a look at this. And there were times, honestly, Jeff, I didn't want to look because we all have this painful garbage in our background that we hold on to. And I have to call it garbage. I'm sorry for lack of a better word that we hold on to.
Junk.
We have all this painful junk that we just can't seem to let go of that goes all the way back into childhood. All the way back, because Mike would start with, you know, the immediate past, and then we'd start going back further and further, and then I'd start seeing things that started really defining. Honest to goodness, after I read Tim's book the other day, I thought, oh my God, how do we ever make it to adulthood after reading that? Because it's true, there's so much of us is caught up in childhood and all these events that shape us. And all of these fears.
Which book was that?
The last one that he wrote on sex.
Oh, on the sexual issues.
Yeah,
okay.
I read that the other day, but there were other things in it because it was talking about giving you a path on how to use Click Track for many things.
Yes.
Because many of those experiences he talked about, I've been through. I've been there, Jeff. So I know.
Yeah.
And I know.
Well, it's interesting, because when we look at, say, I have a sexual issue, or I have a job issue, or I have a relationship issue or a health issue, you know, on and on, whatever the issue is, it always comes back to who we think we are.
Yeah. And when I lost my job, I didn't know how to define myself anymore because I had defined myself so much by being that engineer, being that manager, being something, being that wife, but who was Melody? At that point, I really wasn't sure anymore because I had defined myself by so many masks and so many roles that who was I? And then when Mike and I started working and I listened to, and he had me listen to EFF and we started working on the harder issues, I started really, this interesting picture of myself emerged from childhood forward. You know, the how my mother had taught me to be afraid, how my mother had taught me not to, how my mother, by her own emotional indifference towards me, taught me how to be afraid of so many things.
Talking about parents, grandparents, and others as well, most of these people don't know that they're applying these lessons to us.
No,
that they're not. That they're teaching them. They're just doing the best they can and suffering through it, and unfortunately it transfers over to us.
That's true, Jeff. But, you know, on the other hand, with my PS tech work that I've been doing, I'm able to put this into perspective because my mother's almost 91, and I live with my mother. And I'm trying to understand the whole dynamics now from my childhood forward, and where do I need to be? And who am I? And what she misshaped about me. And to not be resentful and to not be angry with her. That's important to me.
Exactly. When you're small and you conform, you do it out of fear. But as you get older, you still conform to those old ways. But now sometimes you become frustrated, angry, or otherwise. Because, okay, well, I don't want to do this. But you end up doing it anyway, so to speak. And I agree with you. And I think it's something that's really important for us to look at. Again, not to demonize the people, like mom, dad, etc. But just to look at the lessons.
Mm-hmm.
And not only let go of the lessons of the emotional attachments that were made, but also the beliefs that were installed or learned. And again, we have full power over letting all of this go and shifting and changing it, right?
Oh, absolutely. And that's how PS Tech has helped me, to shift a lot of this away. Because I can remember one of my most vivid memories as a child is my mother saying, "I don't love you," because she was mad at me to make me behave, and I'm not going to talk to you. And that whole fear, I can still, I could still feel that fear. I can remember it. I don't feel it anymore. But I can remember how afraid I was that what if my mother goes away and she doesn't love me? And then you know what comes from that? Then there's that constant need of approval, constant need for something, you know? And
if I can't get it there, I'm going to have to go find it somewhere.
Right. Or that feeling that you're not loved, so you go looking for love, like they say in that expression, in all the wrong places.
Yeah.
I put myself through a lot of grief looking for something that I probably, if I'd had the right guidance at that time, probably would not. I don't know. I shouldn't say that because that's, you know, hindsight it has 20/20. But I would think that if you had the right, like, you know, when I listen to that positive affirmations, or I listen to being told I'm a winner in those tapes and that, it makes me realize that if I had had that kind of encouragement as a child,
right,
there would have been no limitations. And I had tremendous self-imposed limitations. You know, the fact that I'm different in the sense that I'm extremely intelligent. And I remember one time even being told, "When are you going to stop studying? You're getting too smart." I can remember being told that, you know? And it's so interesting now looking at all the dynamics in the past and going, like I said before, how the heck did I ever grow up and get it this far in life?
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, when we're struggling, I wonder if we did grow up. You know what I'm saying? We do physically and maybe even mentally a bit, but when our emotions are so tied up like this, I think it stunts any type of true maturity. Definitely stunts our self-sufficiency. Oh, so I really wanted to emphasize, too, part of the memory aspects that are, when we let those go, it really allows us to free our mind model and our mind so that it can expand, but also the people that imposed it upon us, per se, of, like you alluded to, absolute and unconditional forgiveness of them,
mm-hmm,
and having the perception that, hey, I know what they did, you know, wasn't the best, but they did do the best they could at the moment, and it's time to let it go. Not only let them go, but let me go.
Oh, exactly. And that, I think that was probably part of the most liberating of the process here, was understanding that I could see it for what it was worth without judgment. You know, because judgment so often for me is clouded with emotion, that I'm upset, I'm angry, I'm disappointed, I'm disillusioned, something. And now I can just see it for what it is. It was just part of the growing up with imperfect people. And I can also be compassionate because I can also understand now they probably had their own demons they were chasing all along, too.
Oh, definitely, right? No doubt.
But you know, and it's interesting how much more self-assured I am now. And how confident I am, and how I'm no longer on any of these horrible emotional roller coasters I used to get on, where I'd be very high. I'd probably sound like I was almost like I was bipolar sometimes, because I'd be really, really, really up one day, and then the earth could have swallowed me the next, as far as I'm concerned. And it was all because of all this emotional garbage I was carrying along with me from the past.
Yeah, and fighting with your conscious intention that says, hey, I know I'm more than this. Mm-hmm. I know I can have or experience more than this. But then there's the other part that's reminding you that, hey, you're to this, to that, to that. Mm-hmm. You know, sorry, just settle. You know, just get comfortable and forget about it. When you had that previous job a few years ago, you identified you as the job, so to speak, or you as that position.
Oh, absolutely. Because it was a disaster because, first of all, it was one of those situations where I didn't realize I was being set up to fail. I was just going along, working my heart out, putting long hours in, blah, 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 blah. And then
because you weren't let go for performance, right?
Well,
Or were you?
I have no.
Well, in other words, what I mean was they didn't fire you and say we're going to get someone new, did they?
Well, this is what happened. You go ahead and figure this one out. It was a startup company. It was a large startup company outside of Albuquerque, New Mexico. I had a boss that ended up getting fired because he made such a terrible mess of moving from one facility to the other, and we were making kitchen cabinets. Okay. So there was a tremendous amount of damage to inventory, blah, 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 blah. Plus, the quality was not where it was supposed to be. Okay, so he was gone. The second one came in. We had an interim plant manager that spent 2 weeks a month at the factory, and I never talked to him. He never called me, never asked me anything. In fact, that was the one thing he said when he was leaving. Sorry, Melody, I never talked to you the whole time you were there. And it's like, why wouldn't you want to know what your quality manager's doing, okay? Then I crossed paths with the director of something over in the corporation, and he did not like me. He did not like me at all. It was funny because I worked really hard. I had 32 people that reported to me at three departments. I was trying to give everybody tools for success, trying to get their training up to speed, trying really hard to help people be successful. And I was trying to be a team player, which I found out later on was like detrimental to everything over there because people were not being team players. They were being, it's all about me. So anyway, I got the last plant manager was there 3 weeks, called me in and said, it's not working. I need you to go. You have a choice. You can either resign and we'll take it as a mutual resignation in this moment, or I will fire you at the end of the month. Because I asked the question, is there anything I can do? And quite honestly, everybody in that factory was shocked.
So at some stage, do you look at it and go, I didn't really have a choice?
Well, then
is that true?
Well, yes, but then you start second guessing yourself.
Well, what I mean is, hey, you know, I worked hard, I did all this, and I'm not sure what else I could have done, really.
Mm-hmm.
Is that kind of, am I getting that right?
Well, sort of, but I don't know. But then you know what it does? Then it trips into you after a while when you can't get another job, and then you start doubting your ability. You start doubting your skill set. You start doubting everything you know. And I mean, because it starts stripping you after a while of being unemployed, because no matter how you get unemployed, it doesn't matter. You're still unemployed.
Sure.
That's the problem.
Absolutely.
And then you try to stay up because everybody around you, you don't want to fall into the pity party in front of people. So you try to stay strong and say, I'm doing the best. And the interviews were not coming. And then, oh my gosh, it was a terrible time.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's in one aspect here. When we identify ourselves as a position,
mm-hmm.
or we identify our worth as a position, or our worth based on a certain relationship, or because of a certain level of health or whatnot.
Right, right. It's dangerous.
It's dangerous.
Very dangerous.
Because especially in a session with somebody on relationship and obsession and whatnot, when we identify with that relationship, no matter what it is, and most people go into a relationship and say, I'm going to trade, you know, I'm going to give you my love, you give me your love, or I'm going to do this, you do this. It becomes a business relationship for all intents and purposes. it's set up for failure because at some point someone's not going to be able to give anymore. It could be temporary, it could be permanent, it could be somebody dies, whatever the situation. You're setting yourself up for pain, and that doesn't mean you don't go into relationships. But when you go into these job, you go into relationship, et cetera, to identify yourself with it, I think that's where the danger is. And I guess what I'm kind of leading up to is we need to identify ourselves as something much more, someone much more that goes and does this job, that goes into mm-hmm. this relationship and shares, that goes out and does the best they can.
Let me give you, let me give you the other side of this. So okay. I worked with PS Tech for a while, and about a year and a half, well, it was almost 2 years ago. It's been a while I've been with PS Tech on this. And I got a job in Georgia, and I moved to Georgia. I moved to rural Georgia. And I went there differently this time. I didn't go there as Melody quality manager, blah, 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 blah. I went there as Melody who went to do a job. Mm-hmm. I went there, I got a house, I went there and had a life outside of work. I would, even though I did put extra time into it, because that's just the way that I am, I was really trying to help out the owner, okay? I was really trying to do my best in a situation where it was rural Georgia and I had a lot of challenges there from education all the way to perception, so on and so forth. Okay. I lasted at that job from July to the following March. And it was not going well towards the end, but I continued to work at it because it was a job. Okay. So the owner called me in March and said, well, you know, Melody, it's just not working out here. It's not a fit. And I said, you know what? I said, no, it's not a fit, but you know, thanks for giving me this opportunity. Thanks for letting me try. Mm-hmm. He said, and he was shocked by my graciousness on it. I don't know what he was expecting. And that's exactly how I felt. I was not upset, believe it or not. I was devastated from the last one. This time it was okay. It was like, well, okay. And then by the time I left the room, he and the plant manager were saying, well, just, if you need a reference, just call us. We'll be glad to give you a glowing reference. And when I walked out, the plant manager said to me, he said, I know you're a very smart woman and you'll do fine. It just didn't work out for us. And I came back here without being upset. I came back here and a couple of months later, I got this job for the agency I now work for, which people find interesting that I've gone from a manufacturing world to behavioral health, but being in quality, I can pretty much go in any direction with a little bit of training, a little bit of right. whatever. And it's been an excellent opportunity because one of my goals that I really wanted was what they call Six Sigma Lean Black Belt training. And believe it or not, 3 months into this job, I was offered this training for free.
Oh, excellent.
It was excellent because it's like $10,000 if you want to take it on the outside. So not only that, my boss accommodated my schedule, and she said at the end of this, she was glad she could do something for my career because she couldn't think of anything else to offer me.
Interesting.
And
so what I sense here and from your story is the lowered level of emotional attachments, emotional aversions, and the limiting beliefs, and you're still in process working on that,
yes.
so to speak. And we always are,
always
but I mean,
are.
you at that point you had gone quite a contrast from where you were
mm-hmm.
previously,
mm-hmm.
right?
Exactly.
And now, what's part of your character, part of your personality, is flexibility.
Mm-hmm.
Is a knowing that you always come out doing fine.
Oh, absolutely.
In other words, there's less fear.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, and this, okay, I know this is contrarian, but just because I lose a job doesn't mean the end of anything. It just means the end of that job and I go on to the next one.
And it's funny because Mike told me that was a stepping stone all along, that he saw me doing other things. And I said, okay, we'll see what happens, you know. And the other thing that it's helpful here is with all the PS Tech work I've done is because I am in behavioral health now, I don't get emotionally attached to everything I see, hear, and do in that agency. And by golly, I would have been a basket case without all the work I've done on myself if I'd gone in the way I was in the past, because I'm working in an agency that is like the umbrella of society. We handle the homeless, we handle the suicidal, we handle all of that, and I read all the reports because of the position I'm in. So it's really tough, but you know what, I'm okay with it, and I'm thriving in it, actually.
Interesting. Yeah, and if you had heavy, heavy emotional still attachments and things that you had previously, you empathized to the point where you're reliving what these people are living mm-hmm. at the moment, and you no longer are at the same level of a resource that you are when you're much more clear and clean of a lot of that, you know, junk or garbage, whatever you call it. True?
That's true. And the other interesting thing that people are telling me these days, I'm such a calm, peaceful presence for them. They seek me out. They come into my office. They sit a while, and no matter what's been going on, we talk about everything. I'm not emotionally attached to them. We talk, we joke, I make them laugh. They go away feeling 1,000% better.
Very nice.
And that's thanks to all of Tim's work and all of your work and everybody, and Mike, especially Mike, God bless him, his work.
So let me go back to, all right, you ran your first click track, you're on the park bench, you're like, okay, maybe there is something here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, maybe I should call Mike now.
Yeah, exactly.
Kind of kidding. Yeah. But at that point, you're still kind of down in that hole in that muck
mm-hmm.
a bit,
mm-hmm.
all right? What was kind of your approach? Where did you go first in terms of what were you working on? And I know Mike helped you a little and did some sessions here and there,
but
you did a lot of it on your own. Is that true?
I had to do a lot of it on my own. Yep. You know, Mike only had so much time we could spend together on Skype and that, but it was going through the emotions, because emotions were my biggest roadblock, if you want to call it that.
Right.
It was my, and then from the emotions, I went into self-perceptions, because I was so self-limiting. That I couldn't do this. This would never happen. I mean,
in other words, when you talk about perceptions, you mean beliefs.
Beliefs about
right?
myself, because
yeah.
suddenly,
yeah.
suddenly, all the whisperings that people had done, all of my fears. I mean, I have to be honest. When you open Pandora's box, you get a whole flood of things that you may not really want to look at, but you have to deal with them anyway, because they're not going to go away anymore. You know, the box is completely open, so you have a choice. You either have to deal with them or just completely fall to pieces at that point, I would think, because there was a lot that came tumbling out. And Mike was a good resource for the moments when it got really tough.
When a practitioner helps, is they kind of help you sort it out,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So, because when it's all coming at you at once, you're like, ah, what do I do?
Mm-hmm.
And you get overwhelmed. And I think if you are working on your own, the first thing to do is to maybe click track the overwhelm over thinking there's so much.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can sit down and write down and just kind of sort things out. And then, so what you're doing, what you were doing at that time when you first started, when you realize, hey, this is something that you know, maybe it won't change my life, but it'll sure make me feel better, right?
Right, but you know what I did? It was interesting what happened was I started writing a list. I started writing a list of what had impacted me and how was I feeling, all my emotions. And then I was trying to relate them to events in my life, people in my life.
Can you give us an example, maybe?
Let's see.
You know?
Well, I know one good one is my mother. Recalling
okay.
when my mother used to say, when we were real little children and we got naughty or whatever, she'd say, I don't love you anymore. And I'm not going to talk with you at all ever again. And then I can remember running around the house saying, Mama, please talk to me. I'm sorry, you know. And I had not thought about that for years. And then when I started doing the click tracks, it came rushing up as my need for approval. My need that I had done a good job, my need that I wasn't naughty anymore. That's a tough thing for a kid.
Yeah, absolutely. And it kind of spirals into now you're looking, as you alluded, looking for love in all the wrong places.
Oh, absolutely, because you're not really sure what love is at that point, because it seems like
right.
you weren't worthy of it, or you wouldn't be told, I don't love you anymore, and you're told I don't love you by the most important person in your life at that moment. 5 or 6 years old being told that. I mean, I can remember, I could describe it in detail, that experience. And then I started thinking as I'm going along, and I kept lists. Mike would tell me, Mel, write these things down and then go through them.
Yeah.
And I would write lists, and then it's like dissecting a sentence. And then you start identifying what the noun is, what the verb is, all the adjectives that go with it. Here's the next sentence, you know, and it was amazing when I started looking at all the patterns of my behavior.
So you just go about it methodically in a way, right?
That's the engineering.
And when you were more methodical, it was simple, right?
Exactly, because now there's no emotion attached. You're just writing down all these things that you remember, and you're looking at them, and then you're clicking them, and you're going through them in your mind, and then pretty soon they're gone. They're faded. And it doesn't mean the memory doesn't exist. The memory will always be with you, okay? But there's no emotion attached anymore to that memory.
Okay, so in this example, you thought, okay, one of the big impacts, because I feel some tension around mom, right? They feel there's something wrong here. I know I love her, but, okay, there's something going on here that's not like I like to call Jeep, joy, enthusiasm, excitement, peace, okay? Mm-hmm. There's something here that ain't Jeep. So then you went there and go, okay, where did I get the idea that I should be tense around my mother or whatever, anything that's not Jeep? And these kind of, as you click track things, the memories came up, right? Like you mentioned, her saying, hey, she's mad. She says, I don't love you. So you click track the memory like that. True?
True.
Something like that?
Right, exactly. And it was interesting to me because there was a point where I thought I couldn't remember anything about my childhood. Sure, if it's all wrapped up in all kinds of heavy emotions and this, it's like a spiral that you're in. There's a lot of things you're not going to remember.
Like a big blob.
Yeah,
a big blob of fear and sadness. So, and that's a common comment from people is that, I don't have any memories. They're there. It's just been covered up, so to speak, by your own mind. Now, so the more click tracks you did, the more this stuff became apparent, right?
It became apparent, and then Mike would help me sort through sections of it and say, this has to be looked at, Mel, and you have to deal with this because it's not going to go away anymore. And so I'd sit and I'd click track and, oh my gosh, I can't even count the amount of hours I've spent working on myself and these click tracks and so forth, trying to sort myself out. And I'm pretty gosh darn well sorted out now at this point. I'll always have sorting to do, but the great big, I feel like a river that was dammed up by big rocks. And the big rocks are gone now.
Let me ask you this. How you had that memory of your mom saying, hey, I don't love you, which was eons ago. Mm-hmm. How do you feel? You still have the memory, right? This happened. How do you feel about it?
I actually have compassion for my mother because my mother will be 91 on her next birthday, and I do live with my mother. I have compassion for a woman that I often wonder, did she know love herself?
So what's your relationship like with her? You mind my
asking? It's very quiet. My mother's now at the age where she's a bit hard of hearing. She doesn't see very well, so she's slowed down quite a bit. But I'm so glad I've had the ability to sort through all this because the last thing I would want is for her to pass on and carry all these. That's what I tell people. Don't carry it forward. If you've got issues, deal with them now because if you don't deal with them now, you're not going to be able to deal with them later when they're gone. And the only way you can deal with them is with yourself. There's really nothing I can say to my mother now that would make her understand any of this.
I do want to say, though, if our parents have passed on or other people have passed on, we can deal with it within ourselves, though.
Sure.
We can still do that act of forgiveness. I don't think that opportunity is always there. But it's always nicer, like you're alluding to, that it's nice for me to be able to do it because in her final years I'm able to, to some level, I'm able to connect with her on a more, with more of a love than a mixture of some love, but also some,
Well, the thing is, I don't have the resentment, and I agree with you, Jeff.
Exactly.
I didn't want you to think that, I didn't want to allude to the fact that you could never take care of it. There's many, many things you can do after they're gone. But if you've got the opportunity right now to deal with it, deal with it. Don't leave it for tomorrow or the next day or something else,
Absolutely, absolutely. I think it's much more empowering to be able to do that, too, because it gives you the chance to really observe the contrast between, all right, I have a mixture, if you will, if it's possible, of love and resentment, versus now I have more of, at least humanly possible, level of pure love for her and compassion and everything that goes with it. And that's much nicer, and the contrast is incredible. True?
True, exactly. And the other thing that my mother was notorious about is she knew how to push all of our buttons to make us feel guilty, make us feel terrible. She just can't do it anymore. And I carefully point that out to her when she tries it on me sometimes still. Mom, doesn't work anymore. Sorry. This does not work. And then she just goes off on a huff or just gets quiet, one of the two. But
I think in some of those older generations, and this is just an observation, and it's a general one, there are exceptions, but you had the men who basically said, do this, and you do it or else.
Mm-hmm.
But then you had the female, the women, that weren't really allowed to force it as much, so they did more passive-aggressive and used guilt and other things.
Oh, absolutely. Totally agree with you. That was my father and mother.
Yeah, and a lot of them were that way, and to some extent, maybe not fully, but to some. And like you said, it kind of takes that power away, and some of them don't really change per se, but some might say they don't really change, especially as they get older. But in my experience with my mother and along those lines of those stereotypes, I noticed that it did change. When I changed my perception
mm-hmm.
of her,
mm-hmm.
my relationship with her did change, okay? I no longer, either I didn't notice it or she stopped doing it, I didn't see the passive-aggressive behaviors coming toward me any longer.
I guess that's better put, Jeff, than what I was trying to explain,
you know?
Because it doesn't affect me anymore somehow.
I mean,
I'm sure it's still there because I see how my sisters react and my nephews and nieces react. I see how that goes. But, you know, I think the other challenge is this. We're taught by society that mothers should be a certain way. And when they're not that certain way, we don't know how to deal with it because we were told, gee, mom should have been like that. The element of mom still being a person was taken out of the formula when we were kids. So we feel somehow cheated or let down or something as a result of that.
So you did a lot of much more of the click tracks and EEFs and emotional stuff at first.
Oh, yes.
Right?
Yes.
And then the beliefs, you started kind of shifting, not getting rid of the emotional stuff because it might still come up here and there. And I have that experience too. I do far less emotional work per se versus what I did years ago. And now more I work on beliefs and statements and whatnot
right.
of the characteristics and personalities that I want to move toward or manifest more in my life experience.
The personal positives now I've shifted more towards.
Okay.
And the,
so you're using those more.
Right. I'm using those more, and I'm using the relaxational one where it talks about being a winner, being so on and so forth. That's the one I was alluding to earlier where I can fall asleep on the bus when I'm listening to it. But it's just the idea that I'm now moving into the point in my life where I feel like I can do anything I set out to do, anything now.
So have you done anything? As Tim has alluded in some of his recordings, what have you done that amazed yourself?
Well, I will. Since you don't know where I work, I can mention it. I've just been told recently that they're going to promote me to director where I'm working. And that's like a huge, huge jump for me in a way, because I remember when I started out my career, I thought that if I made this amount of money and I got this certain title, wow, I really would have hit the pinnacle of my success. And it was like, when I was told that the other day, it was like, wow, really?
Right.
But it was interesting how it was presented to me. Because it wasn't formalized, that's why I can't say too much about it yet.
Yeah, that's okay.
The point was that my boss said to me, you know, we were talking about you the other day, Melody, me and one of these chief executive officers, and we're talking about how far-sighted you are, that so many people around us are short-sighted, and yet you could introduce all these things in that. And I thought, oh, that's interesting. You do watch.
Oh, they're watching me more closely than I thought.
Exactly.
Ah!
No.
Oh, boy.
And what was really funny about it is I thought that she probably expected me to be like, oh, my God. I said, oh, I get to be a monkey now, too. It's a terrible thing to say. I know. But the point was I wasn't going to take it that seriously. I refuse to return to the land of I identify myself with my job.
So is your life more of a – life sounded like it used to be a big drama, right?
My life is very quiet now. My life used to be a tremendous drama. I have probably more stories that could fill a whole library of books of people and events in my life. And people keep saying, really, Melody, you ought to write about your life someday because people would find it fascinating. But now I enjoy the quietude. I'm out in society all week, and these are long days because I commute on a bus and so work in this agency and everything. I just love the quietness of the weekend where I don't have to do anything and I'm perfectly content.
Isn't it boring, though?
Absolutely not, because I'm happy with me. And the fact that I like myself, I'm free to be able to do anything I feel like. And I have all these choices.
How would you describe you? Is it something describable?
Well...
Or is it difficult to describe?
If you were to say, who is Melody?
Yeah.
That would be a little tough because the Melody that I am now is very confident. I feel very liberated. I don't feel emotionally tied down or emotionally anything. The emotion is still there. I can cry at the, you know, on a commercial if I wanted to, okay? I could, you know. You remember that old one about call your mother? You should call your mother. I could cry on that one, okay? But I'm finding out that it's all about choices. I choose my emotions now. I don't let other people dictate how I feel anymore. And that's really liberating.
You know, it's interesting because the description you have now is more about characteristic, right?
Mm-hmm.
More about personality. 5, 10 years ago and longer, of course, it was more specific and detailed. Does that sound right?
Yeah, because then I would tell you, I was this, I'm that, I'm something else. Whereas nowadays, I just am.
And I think this is important as people listen. And that's what I was toward the beginning, and I was trying to craft this point here, is that when we identify ourselves in such minute detail to a specific act and something out there, and as a good friend of mine here on the island says, there is no out there. When we identify with what's out there, we're going to have problems. But when we begin to identify what's within, and I like to call it higher self, you can call it whatever you like, then we have the ability to expand more. And I think that lends itself to, like your current management is saying, you're farsighted. You can do that as your mind expands. And what I mean by expand is, and you touched on that, one of your characteristics is I'm free. I can expand it. I can look at things easily and see other things that I couldn't have seen before.
Well, it's like the relationship, and I'm not going to go into too much detail about it. The relationship that I'm in now with what I would call my best friend and companion. It's all about choosing to be together. It's all about mutual respect. It's not about I give you love, you give me love. It's about choosing to be together because we can. And, you know, that's very liberating because there's no expectation there. There's just that unconditional love that says we enjoy each other. We're each other's best friends. And, you know, and we're allowed to expand. I'm allowed to expand on the person or the personage that I am and saying, well, who is Melody is really, there's probably 1,000,000,000 words you could use there and you still wouldn't describe me.
There you go. And that's what I was kind of alluding to. Could you really describe it? Yeah, you can, but not really.
Exactly.
Or you could start to, but you never come to an end of the description.
Exactly.
Also, that's fascinating. So the relationship you have, completely different from the types of relationships you used to have?
Oh, you know, let's go back to the story about how my mother said she didn't love me. I've been married twice, and I'm not, you know, I don't mind sharing that with people. The first person I married was more like my father, but it was a please love me, please accept me relationship, and it was in there for all the wrong reasons.
I'll do anything if you'll love me, practically.
And by the way, that's very true. I got confused about what is love, what is selfless love, and you end up losing yourself in the process. I can tell you there's a different kind of emotional abuse that goes on with that. Second husband was younger than me, but he was already damaged, and I was there because he made me laugh, and I tried to fix somebody that, you know, you can't fix anybody. You can only fix yourself, okay? And so, again, it was one of those situations of, I'll do anything for you because I love you, but that's really a bad way to be because you get nothing in return. People become acquiescent to too many things. And so when he found somebody else or whatever, she was probably the exact opposite of me. And it made sense, you know, because I became that comfortable old shoe that he could depend on. You know, relationships are more than that. And then there was the third one before the one I'm in now.
Okay.
And that
okay.
was one that was very elusive. The one that I didn't bring up in my story that dropped me right in the middle of my crisis in New Mexico.
Mm, okay. Okay.
And then that really, really like tipped the barrel over too, because it's like there was no emotional support that I felt I really needed from the same person I had been helping through major crises in his life and everything. Yeah. And suddenly I'm facing my own and he's not there. One thing that I learned with PS Tech looking at this is the cycles we get into. You know, you talk about how people who've been married to alcoholics will continuously marry an alcoholic or be involved with them because that's what they're comfortable and familiar with. And where I am now is in a different direction than where I started out with all these other relationships.
I think what's important here, one of the messages I'm getting from you as well, is I know you went through your life experiences and they all helped shape it. You previously identified yourself with things on the outside, and it took losing all of those things before you finally said, okay, I surrender. I got to do something different. I got to go within. I got to go inside first.
Mm-hmm.
Does that sound accurate?
That sounds accurate, because I was also thinking about when I moved to Georgia. I had pretty much, before I moved to Georgia, had to sell off most things because I had to keep going in life. And this is really funny. It's like the universe saying, pay attention, Melody. So I had about 30 boxes that I sent to Georgia to move my stuff. That's all I had was 30 boxes, believe it or not. And when they arrived in Georgia, I had them sent to the factory because I was trying to be nice and save money and everything. A whole bunch of them got destroyed. Not only did they get destroyed, I couldn't collect a cent on it because all of a sudden UPS just dug their heels in and said, we're not responsible. So here was probably one of the biggest tests of all the work I had done with PS Tech. How do I handle losing the rest of the beautiful things I had, okay? And people were just shocked and upset for me. And I looked at them. Yeah, I cried for a moment because I thought, you know what? It's just stuff. It's not me. And from that moment forward, it didn't bother me a bit. It just makes a great story now. That's it.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, stuff can be fun and all.
Yeah.
But it's the attachment to the stuff.
Yeah.
And this isn't really a new concept for anybody, but that's what creates the issues.
Exactly.
And the more I let go, the easier it is that these things return to me. Does that make sense?
Oh, that's true. Because, you know, it's really interesting because when this happened, it was like pretty much everything that I had in the past now was gone. And it didn't matter anymore. You know, it's like, okay, let's move forward now. Next, you know, people were shocked that I had such a Zen approach to it, but it was like, it just didn't matter. I'm not my things. I don't define myself by the job I have or the things I own.
Well, and I think whatever, say, you can call it spiritual, you can call it whatever, ethical, however you want to define it, doesn't matter. But whatever direction you want to move toward, and let's just use a spiritual example like you alluded to, a kind of a Zen-like thing, whatever direction you want to move in those ways that's more freeing, the PS Tech Click Tracks, the PS Tech Positive, and the other tools, but as those little core of basics and the EEFs and whatnot, they can help you get there much more easily and much more quickly, yeah?
That's exactly what helped me. Because I can tell you, you know, I lost some beautiful things there. And it was so funny because I actually looked at that and I thought, wait a second, what are you so upset about? It's just stuff, you know? And I have more stuff now than I did before.
Interesting.
It metamorphed into something else.
Maybe something more appropriate. I don't know.
Oh, it's more appropriate and it's simpler. Let's put it this way. So it's
okay.
Fun.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go. Well, I appreciate all the time you've given us here today and some of the insights, and especially in my view, the illustration is, yes, you can kind of lose it all and finally get to the bottom and start going back up. But that's a choice too, right?
Exactly.
You don't have to wait till you get to the bottom. And that's what I was kind of alluding to earlier is, hey, if things seem like they're okay now, but you're still kind of anxious and you're fearful, now's the time to click track it.
Oh, absolutely. Because I, you know, and still even I get twinges of anxiety now. And then who doesn't in life? There's all kinds of things constantly tossed at you. But I found all it just takes is a few minutes of quiet, a few calming words from Tim or from you or from somebody else, and I'm fine. I'm just back bouncing out again.
Any final words for our listeners here?
Well, I would say this. If you get the opportunity, take it, because you know, this is probably the best thing I ever did for myself. And I would say if you give it a chance, you'll find out it's the best investment you ever gave in yourself.
Very good. I appreciate that, Melody.
Okay.
All right, everybody. I appreciate everybody listening in today. Down below here, if you're on the page, if you can leave a nice mahalo, a thank you comment for Melody. I'd appreciate that. She would, too. And I also put on Mike Wells' link there if you want to chat with him or if you have any questions. He's an open book, too, so he'll be more than happy to help you anytime. Thanks again, everybody, for visiting. Thanks again, Melody. I appreciate it. Everybody take good care. Aloha.